Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Second hour here at Thursday Edition. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106 through the game. Joe Rex Road here with Paul Kuharski in for Robbie. Nick Keezer, intern Colin. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we're going to get into Titans future, but not like next week future, PK. I've got to get you on this because, as I mute myself mid-sentence.
Hop into the YouTube chat, people. I just popped in there.
So. Oh, okay. There you go. We got the YouTube chat, and you also have the there you go. Paul Kuharski says greetings. Also have the game and the phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, which is 615-737-1025. But T. Higgins on the horizon, PK. T. Higgins is he's playing on the tag this year, and there's no extension right now. And I mean, you know, I guess he could be tagged again next year. But I think there's a possibility, if the Titans are so inclined, that he could be the guy, you know, basically after Hopkins, right? I mean, he could be the guy to take Hopkins' place in theory, but that would also mean you are paying T. Higgins, whatever you're paying him, no small fee, along with already now paying Calvin Ridley. Is this of interest to you? Do you feel like this is something that down the line should be pursued by the Titans? There are other options.
It's of interest to me for them to get a big-time wide receiver next year. I don't think it needs to be T. Higgins. It could be T. Higgins. I think a year into this thing, maybe Brian Callahan's pre-existing relationship with T. Higgins is more valuable. He says, I still really need a guy that I know. My knowledge of T. Higgins is more of a guarantor than some other things. But, you know, if C.D. Lamb gets to free agency, if Brandon Ayuk, who's demanding a trade now, which is dangerous for him, I wouldn't want to be on the Commanders instead of the 49ers. If he gets to free agency, those guys are equally, if not more, intriguing, as is a high draft pick. You know, if Luther Burden is in range, or some of these other guys, McMillan or Egbuka, whoever rises to be high. And look, the wide receiver crop is going to be great every year now based on how college football goes.
Some ups and downs, but yeah.
Yeah, even a down year at wide receiver is going to include some very good wide receivers. So I think wide receiver is going to be a priority for the Titans next year. They're going to seek to get younger. Tyler Boyd is only a one-year contract, and you don't know what you're going to get out of him this year and where his price goes from there, depending on how he does. You don't know what's going to happen with DeAndre Hopkins. I think we all expect good things, but you cannot say for sure. I think it will be a position that's in somewhat flux next year. But I think the dot connecting between Callahan and T. Higgins is a little bit too easy. And
yeah,
T. Higgins will have other quarters if he bounces back.
Now, sure.
He wasn't hurt so much as other people were hurt. He did miss 5 games last year and was down to 656 yards. So he was hurt after 2,000-yard seasons. But even hurt, averaged 15.6 yards per reception, which is a number you've got to like.
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to, well, look, the Callahan thing is just, it's a natural edge potentially.
Yeah.
And then a lot of it is, of course, what Callahan thinks of him, right? He had some very productive years. You know, a guy like him, I do a little bit look at and say, how much do you benefit from having one of the top 2 or 3 receivers in the league on the other side of the field? How much does that help you? You know, but I think it's a possibility. I'm with you. There are guys you could draft. Do you think that there's any thought at all about giving Hopkins another year before you, or just, or is it 100% they're going to play this year out and then?
I don't know. There might be some thought. I wouldn't. I would wait and see. I just think with a receiver over 30, you wait and see.
He is different, though.
He is different.
As we've discussed.
He is different, but I would still wait and see.
Yeah, and that's where I wouldn't. I mean, I like the idea of if you can get something, if you can get something reasonable. I mean, because if you're him, it's like, what's he making this
year?
There
was no interest in him last year. Yeah.
No, I know.
Yeah, you know, he's going to have played two more seasons.
Teams were wrong.
After teams having no interest in him. And teams were wrong. But if you had no interest in him 2 years ago, two more years of wear and tear on him, I don't think as a, what's he going to be, 33-year-old, there's going to be a great deal of interest in him again, and I think you'll have a leg
right.
up.
I think you're right, except that if he has another year where he plays the entire season, he produces like last year, I think some of those teams, first of all, are going to be like, man, we blew that, right? And I think there'll be a reasonable amount of interest.
I think there'll be a play like that
because, again, he is one of those guys who, here and there, you get those guys who just defy their age. And we'll see.
I agree. But I don't think he's a first-week free agent for most teams.
That's
so
right.
The Titans would still be in the driver's seat if they're going to give him some form of security early. After the season, before free agency opens, or at the beginning of free agency, where other teams would be like, I like DeAndre Hopkins, but let's look at the younger options first. Or let's think about a draft pick first, which I think a lot of teams would do.
Yeah. Well, they need to have a drafted receiver who comes in and develops, of course. And this is, of course, as we've talked about, big year for Treylon Burks. What about the slot position?
You also need to see how leadership develops in that group out of what they have. How does Ridley handle that role? What does Boyd bring to it? And what do you want to carry over into next year there? And how much is Hopkins crucial in that area?
Yeah.
On top of his production.
Yeah.
What's the value added there?
I think
the value added is significant, but what's the value lost there if he's not back?
So Boyd is this team's slot receiver. What about Jackson and Phillips in terms of right now, not asking for your whole 53, but right now, as you look at the receiver room in particular?
I don't see how Phillips makes the roster if Jackson is what they expected when they drafted him. And I thought Jackson looked reasonably good during the offseason. You can't carry three slot receivers.
Right.
None of those slot Phillips receivers are doing anything on special teams outside of being a return option, I can't see how Kyle Phillips can be a return option again. I mean, I'm sure they'll give him a clean slate, and I'm pretty confident he'll screw it up based on his history of screwing it up. I mean, I don't know how Kyle Phillips turns into a reliable punt option now, and he should be behind Jackson. So Jackson would have to screw it up first to open a door for Kyle Phillips. Kyle Phillips is a wonderful a practice player who's not made it onto the field. I don't see how he makes the roster.
It's interesting because he did make it on the field at Pittsburgh and looked pretty good, right? And you're like, okay, there's some of what you see in practice. But
now I do think if he found a way to make the roster, that he would be better used. Look, I touted when he came off IR last year. Here's what the Titans need. This guy's going to be a difference maker for them. Short area quickness is just what they need. Third and four, this guy's going to get to five and be an option for Will Levis. And then they did not use him like that at all. It was as if they were confused by what they had. And the guy we see at practice who gets open on that underneath stuff on a regular basis and shakes people and gets us all excited was not used that way by Tim Kelly or Mike Vrabel or the staff for whatever reason.
Or he didn't get
the ball. It seemed like it really, I think it was more that they didn't use him that way than him not getting the ball.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got the receiver room. You've obviously got Ridley, Hopkins, Boyd. Jaquan Jackson, I'm with you. That's the guy they picked. Well, the
fourth would be Burks.
Burks.
NWI, fifth.
Okay, so Jaquan Jackson, now you're
Jaquan
at six.
Jaquan Jackson is six.
This certainly feels like a receiver room of six with this offense, right?
I would draw a line there. And then you got some competition with Phillips, who I think is very unlikely. Kiaris Jackson, who's another guy who kind of fits that same role. He would be the fourth slot. Yeah. I don't think he's got much of a chance. Harrison, is an outsider.
You got Dowell coming off the ACL.
Dowell's on PUP. He's not close. He hurt himself in the second to last game, I think, with the ACL. If we see him, it'll be very late in the season, and because they've got room for him, he could miss the entire year. We missing anybody there?
I don't think so. I don't think there's anybody who's a serious contender there, to play. So we come back, we will talk more Titans receivers. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. All right, let's give some tickets away. What do you say? Eh? Sure. Nick Kieser with a shrug.
You all go right. ahead.
I'll take that.
Caller number nine.
Are you okay with caller number nine? All right. He says he's fine.
Yes,
John Fogarty.
That away.
August 7th, First Bank Amphitheater. These tickets will be emailed to you by the promotion staff Monday. So we'll do it. We'll do caller number nine for John Fogarty. Play Fortunate Son! I definitely want to hear some good CCR out of John Fogarty. All right. I found this. Oh, real quick, PK. I found this column, okay, from the Tennessean. From my days at the Tennessean, Knoxville, Tennessee, October 20th, 2018, okay? Basically writing, the headline is like, it's over for college football, Alabama's, and of course that year they blew it and lost to Clemson in the title game. So I was wrong, but listen to this stat. I found this in we were talking about Jerry Jeudy, okay? And like all the ridiculous, like that day ended with Tua, like his quarterback rating was like 248. He had a TD to pick ratio of 25-0 after that game. But listen to this. Jerry Jeudy came into that game averaging 4.6 yards per pass route run, okay? 27 yards a catch, yeah, that's fine. That's okay. 27 yards a catch, sure. 4.6 yards per pass. So on a series when he runs two pass routes, you're getting a first down. I find that to be one of the most ridiculous stats I've ever heard. And I don't have a great context for it, like what's the average? I've never even seen a stat like that, but I'm just saying. That's how ridiculous they were. But the text earlier was right. You then follow that up the next year with LSU and what they had going on, even another level. And, of course, in terms of NFL impact, big edge to LSU. So talking about the Titans receiving core, but also Titans, you wanted to talk, PK. Titans have made a change in the organization.
Well,
someone who's been there – long time.
They announced yesterday that Ralph Auchenfels, who joined the team in 1998 as director of marketing, has retired. 26 years with the franchise, 34 years in the league. He was with the Packers previously. So he most recently was vice president of business development. He's been vice president of corporate sponsorships. He's been vice president of marketing, broadcasting, and digital rights. Burke Nyhill called him a legend and said he's on the Mount Rushmore of Titans business executives. He was involved in the uniform reveal, which was such a big success down on Broadway.
Yep.
He was involved in the draft, which was such a success. He was involved in I think, all three stadium naming rights deals. Most recently, he's been involved in raising a ton of money for the Titans Foundation, that Hall of Greats that's in the – in a concourse at Nissan Stadium, which is a pretty cool interactive thing. was his pet project, I think, and heavily involved in Titans All Access, the TV show. This is a guy who was here from the beginning. Super high, energetic guy. If you've ever met
relentlessly him, nice guy.
Yeah, if you've ever met him, you would remember him. Donated his kidney to his mom, I think, along the way, and was involved with the local National Kidney Foundation. So a super terrific guy. Wanted to take a moment to acknowledge all his fine work. And to say, I fear this is another example of the Titans probably squeezing out somebody who's been a lifelong heart and soul member of their front office as they become more corporate. I have good cause to believe that that's the case. I think he's my age, your age,
You're way older than me, but keep going.
Early to mid 50s. I don't know. Maybe they paid him very handsomely, and he's in a fantastic position to be able to retire. Most guys in their early and mid-50s are not in position to retire, no matter how well they've done working for an NFL franchise. And so if that's the case, I feel very badly for him. I think the Titans have treated him very nicely going out. Jim Wyatt wrote a very nice piece, so he's treated better going out than Stuart Spears was, who just dropped off the masthead. But guys like that did so much for the fabric of this organization. I don't understand the exit strategy the Titans have for them. So either way, Ralphie, I've texted with him, and he's certainly not saying anything like that. He going out with all of his charm and pizzazz and enthusiasm and gratefulness. Wish you the best. Hope to see you around. Hope to have lunch with you soon. And it won't be the same to not run into you in the hallways and get the super enthusiastic handshake that he always gave. And I hope that the Titans, as they bring in people to replace Ralph Achenfels, let them develop relationships with the media the way that somebody like Ralph did. In my experience, they don't. It's a kind of an antiseptic place now where these people are cordoned off, and we don't know, you could speak to this, those people who are now lifeblood of the franchise people. And I don't think that's great for the organization that the new Ralph Achenfelses are walled off. And we have no idea what they do or who they are or how they function or what the organization means to them and everything. And the Titans are far from the most corporate team in the league, but they're a hell of a lot more corporate than they used to be.
And that's the league, but yeah. I would more so the Titans, no doubt about it. In 8 years, I would absolutely agree with that. Adam in Portland on the phone line, driven by Wilson County Honey.com. What's up, Adam?
He's 57, Ralph, by the way.
Hey, I'm waiting for
Adam.
Hey, do we have Adam in Portland?
Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got you now.
All right, Joe. So, yeah, you were talking about the receivers, dude. Like, I'm sitting here thinking about the 2021 season where we kind of botched Josh Reynolds, if you'll remember that. He wanted out. We ended up getting rid of him because we were like, oh, we got AJ and we got Julio. Next thing you know, Julio's hurt. AJ stays hurt. And then we're playing dudes. Marcus Johnson, Mason Kinsey's getting reps, Cam Batts, and all these dudes that had no business being on the field. So when I hear PK going through the roster and he's like, I don't even know if this – I mean, I agree right now. I don't think Kyle Phillips makes the team, but, like, he could be important in 3 weeks. Like, especially – I mean, I don't know. I'm interested to see if everybody in Chicago gets hurt because Vrabel's there. Like, I wonder if Vrabel's doing something. Like, I don't know if it's his fault. Probably not. But, like, I'm looking
Cleveland,
to see
mean,
if we could
Chicago.
Actually keep guys healthy – and if we're going to have to lean on some of these dudes PK's talking about, probably won't make the team.
Well, first off, if you think Vrabel's got a big enough role in Cleveland to go get involved in getting people hurt as if he was responsible for getting people hurt here in the first place.
He's probably going to hit a few people.
That's a pretty good stretch. Josh Reynolds had no interest in being here. As soon as they got Julio Jones, he was like, well, they're knocking me down the pecking order. Screw that. He went through the motions.
He got hurt, too.
Was not a professional. and he had no interest in being here. And I could tell you, they made it sound like it was a mutual release to make Josh Reynolds look good. It wasn't a mutual release. They wanted Josh Reynolds out. Josh Reynolds screwed them over. And the fact that Josh Reynolds could go to Detroit and be a good player showed you just how much Josh Reynolds screwed them over. And it was another misread of the love ball factor by Mike Vrabel and John Robbins.
100%. Well, let me ask you this then, PK. I'm not saying, because this is a stupid statement to say Mike Vrabel gets people hurt. I will be interested to see how healthy our team is with a new coaching staff. I'll just say that too. Like that was a big deal, man. You set the record 2 years in a row. Like, it's important. That's an important piece of this team is, can you stay healthy?
Yeah, well, we've got a topic coming on that. But I don't think Mike Vrabel and his coaching staff have anything to do with Kyle Phillips' inability to stay healthy. I think Kyle Phillips is a fragile guy.
Thank you, Adam. And, yeah, we've talked about that. Like you said, you got some interesting stuff coming up on specific guys coming in and health statuses. But, I was arguing against this for year over year on, you know, guys, you know, look, people pull hamstrings. People, you know, twist their ankle. They sometimes, unfortunately, plant wrong in a field and they tear an ACL. They get a shoulder. This league is built to destroy bodies. But I also, Adam's right, they set the record. And obviously they've been searching for answers. So I'm very interested, too, to see, they certainly have changed things. How much does that matter? I think player acquisition was an under-discussed part of those issues.
Absolutely. Like, and look, they're going to manage workloads even more. Manage practices even more. And then we're going to hear from some guys who see highlights on Twitter and say, my God, they look soft. They're not doing anything. I think at 2 o'clock you're going to hear, I saw tape from practice today and they're playing patty cakes out there.
By the way,
do you want them hurt? You know,
we're going to hear the other side of it.
Sure.
There's always, yeah, whatever it is, you're going to hear the other side. By the way, Jared texted me yesterday and said he enjoys hearing 3 hours of you complaining about him. I'm like, well, we've gone an hour and a half. The first mention is Stilly. All right, we come back. We're going to switch gears a little bit.
If he's on vacation and listening to us, he's got some problems.
Oh, he loves it. I think he listens to every word. We're going to get into Tim Corbin of Vanderbilt Baseball real quick. I talked to him this week, and it was a very interesting conversation, and I want to get PK's thoughts on that and where that program is. Quickly, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. The Game Summer Ticket Tour is back. Join our own Joe Dubin at Yazoo Brewing Company, 900 River Bluff Drive in Madison this Thursday, that's today, from 4 to 6, as he gives away tickets to upcoming concerts in Nashville, including Def Leppard, Bush, Train, Dierks Bentley, and more. Also, get signed up for the grand prize tickets to a Preds home game, Sounds game, and the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/tour. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. 102.5, 106 through The Game. Paul Kuharski in for Robbie Stanley. And PK, I want to get, we've talked a little college baseball with you in the past, but this week I went over to Vanderbilt and I sat down with Tim Corbin as he had a break during his camp. They're doing their camp this week.
Camp, which I failed to get my son in.
You failed? Like you well, late,
never,
too late?
Yeah, never paid attention to the deadlines.
You've done
stuff.
It before, though?
I will be making sure that I don't miss the deadline next year.
He has been in it before?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got to do that because I think Corbin does the slip and slide at the end, too. The kids love that. But look, it's a really tough time right now for Tim Corbin. You're talking about the longest stretch of not getting to the second weekend since the aughts. You're talking about Tennessee winning it all. You know, the sport has been flipped upside down. And I think for a coach like him in particular, at a place like he works in particular, some of these changes are more challenging than for other coaches in other places. And so I had the question, I guess the prevailing question is, you know, how do you navigate this, and also how motivated are you to navigate it?
No question about his motivation to navigate it. He's going to stay in ball as long as he can, and I would think, based on the sound of it, like when the day comes that he retires at Vanderbilt, he's going to go coach like 17-year-olds or 13-year-olds or whatever, ball is in his blood.
It's really interesting because, look, a year ago I talked about, I mean, I could see Corbin maybe just being like, yeah, I don't want to deal with it. But like Nick Saban just did, and right. He brought that up. Other coaches have gotten out. I mean, Maggie Corbin did a piece of their last year, and the quote was, this could be the end of us, talking about NIL, talking about the portal, right? So
he's not willing to wave that flag. And here's what struck me about what he said in your interview with him. First off, he said, you know, I or we hold standards and values that we've had for a long time, and we want to do that but stay within the system that we have. That, to me, is a Vanderbilt mission statement that you wish could apply to the whole school. You know, that's what you wish the football team was saying, but the football team hasn't had any success to be able to say that, right? People will hate this comparison, you know, but I was up at Columbia a couple weekends ago visiting with my core group of friends because one of their oldest sons now is – you know, hopefully on the radar to play soccer at Columbia. Well, Columbia has three good programs now: men's tennis, women's basketball, and baseball. Those three coaches are like friends with each other. And while they operate within the scheme of the athletic department, which is not good, they also know, like, hey, the three of us are the ones. You know, we hope there will be other ones that come, but they kind of have their own little clique. Like, hey, we get it. We're making it work in this difficult framework. And that's kind of what Corbin is over there, and the bowling coach, and, you know, maybe one or two others. Not that they're clicky that way, but there are a couple who are making it work inside a difficult athletic framework.
But he's the one, you're right, but he's the one who, in a sport where to do it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right. So he's the model. You wish everybody could be talking the way he's talking. He talks about the NIL and the end of amateurism and all of that stuff as sloppily done and not humanistically done, pulling kids away from growth periods and the effect that the COVID period had and all of that. And Paul Skeens and Brandon Montgomery, guys he had a chance at, maybe. But really, you know, he's not going to pay a kid $800,000. He's not going to pay travel expenses for the family. He's not going to pay incentives, which are things that he's lost kids to. Now, it's not quite basketball-like because you need more kids than basketball. But I've long said you should be able to win in basketball at Vandy. It's small enough where you could go find the kind of kids that can come to Vandy, be academically successful, and give you 12 kids you could win with. And I think reading this and before this, I thought Corbin may not be able to get Skeens and Brandon Montgomery, but I think that he can get 15 kids. I don't know how big a program is, but 15, 18 are enough to put together a program that can contend for a national championship based on his resume and their history, who are MLB prospects, who are good enough, who are willing to come and be real students and do the things. So he might miss out on some of the guys that he really wants and can't convince to do those things. But there are those guys out there who will do those things, and he can find them. And maybe they have to be rich kids, you know, who will turn away bigger NIL things. Maybe they have to be, they have to be a certain kind of kid. But that's not a different thing at Vanderbilt. Now, maybe it's a different kind of thing for him because for a while he didn't have to have the pool was bigger for him, and now the pool has gotten smaller like it is for most coaches at Vanderbilt. But if I had to pick somebody that I trust to be able to weed through that, it's him.
Yeah, it's obviously changed a lot. They had some advantage, though it's been grossly exaggerated by other fan bases and other coaches, with the need-based aid, right? So that helped them make up the difference with some kids who had need, who had economic need. That's the thing. It's need-based aid. And they had that at Vanderbilt, at the university, not just the program. So they were able to have some kids get more money for scholarships than other schools could provide. Although need-based aid, by the way, is not confined only to Vanderbilt. I mean, I could go on about this. It's been way exaggerated, but obviously you get into this era, and basically SEC teams now, I mean, they're all on full scholarship now. That's one thing that NIL is, it's basically, okay, fill in the scholarship money for the most part. I know that there was one Tennessee player that I talked to this year who, and he was, it was Stamos who pitched for them, who did not get that. But if you're a key player for an SEC or like a major baseball program now, the partial scholarship thing's pretty much over. You're going to be on a full ride. So then you go from there, then what do you get beyond that? Corbin, as you said, talked about $800K for one season. I mean, that is a big number in baseball. Now, in football, you've got quarterbacks who are
easily getting that.
Oh, no, who are getting multiple millions a year at the highest level of college quarterback. But a singular baseball player, $800K, asking for $800K plus travel expense. Think about what travel expenses could add up to. What are we talking?
If it's a kid from
Arizona.
Are
we talking about your uncle too? Like, yeah. who we, you know, that. And like incentives, that's wild. Now, as Corbin also says in this interview, and we've talked about, and it has to be, it's going to get to, I think, some form of labor management and contracts. And if you get to actual contracts like that, you could have incentives for a college player. I mean, why not, right? But right now, it's like, I think, you know, Corbin is like a lot of coaches. He just says what a lot of coaches won't say. I mean, a lot of coaches would not want to say what he said in this interview because it's like people are going to use that against me and all this stuff. And so I give him credit for that.
But they also have to. You have to go to school at Vanderbilt.
Well, that's right.
So Skeens left Air Force where he was flying and thinking about military life to go to LSU. Why? To focus strictly on baseball and do a lot less academics. And fair?
Sure. And you get
and
a big
Montgomery
payday,
left Stanford to go where?
To Texas A&M.
To go to Texas A&M, right. Another state school where he could be more focused on baseball.
Yeah.
All right.
And
well,
I
you can be
I don't
focused
begrudge
on,
either move at all. Right.
Right. So he's not going to get that guy unless he gets him from the beginning and he's committed to what they're doing at Vanderbilt.
Right. Like,
now, can you find 18 guys who are doing that at Vanderbilt and willing to hold off on the money and take the payoff of being part of the Vanderbilt program and having and being attached to Vanderbilt instead of being attached to LSU or Texas A&M? I think so. But I come from the kind of background where that would appeal to me.
Right.
Are there enough kids that would appeal to in the country? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, and that's the thing. You want the Skeens and the Braden Montgomery to be with you from the start. Then they are getting, you know, they're very difficult academic schools there, right? And so they can do that. They did it. They succeeded at it. And then you want them with you for. And then maybe
now can he hold on to them the way Air Force and Stanford couldn't hold on to them? That's the question.
But if you get three years, you still, you know, or whatever you get.
But do you think he could have held on to them? I don't know.
I don't know. It's situational.
Now he almost got Montgomery. You said
they were in on Montgomery. My understanding is Montgomery and Skeens. Certainly were possibilities for coming to Vanderbilt. So,
all right, so as long as he's in on those guys, his hit rate maybe goes down. But, you know, maybe they're not in on it every year, but they're, you know, not in on College World Series potential winning every year, but they'll cycle to have their chances.
Yeah, I mean, this last draft cycle, they kept a lot of their recruiting class, which has been a huge. They had two straight recruiting classes that were just pillaged by the draft, and that's the thing. If you want to recruit at the highest level, and Vanderbilt's had a lot of those classes, number one, number two in the country, like Tennessee does right now. Well, the draft's going to start infringing on your
And what's
talent.
Your plan B? How does that work? I'm not really familiar with that. I mean,
see,
you
the
can't
plan
really
B
have
now
a plan
is,
B.
Well, the plan B now is the portal, right? Yeah.
I mean, and is he active in the portal?
Yeah. I mean, they've gotten some kids. I'm actually going to get into that in my rant. But they did have a huge development. Jonathan Vastine, shortstop, really good player, is coming back, and he was a draft that they got some kids who were coming back. And that's what he said in the interview, too. It's like you got to have some seniors who don't quite like where they go in that draft after the third year, and they're like, okay, I'm going to come back. And that's where NIL, for every all these schools, I mean, Tennessee football, Amari Thomas is a very good player. Before all this stuff, he's in the NFL, and he might be a fourth or fifth round pick, right? I mean, he's a very – I think he's going to play in the NFL. He's going to be a rotational guy in the NFL, and he would have been a middle round pick. Well, he's coming back to Tennessee because I promise you he's getting paid well to do it, and you don't have to go and try to be a fourth or fifth round pick. But the same thing is true in baseball, right? If you're slotted – if you're drafted way low in the draft, now you're that valuable to that particular program, okay, well, we'll pay you, you know, $200K or whatever it is to come back. I'm just giving you hypotheticals. And now you come back for your senior year, there's more, obviously, incentive to come back for some of these guys.
Well, I'll tell you now, if Ravenwood's Simon Kuharsky develops as he dreams and gets a Vanderbilt scholarship, he will give 3 years.
There we go. That, okay.
Probably four.
You're on the record. You're on the record. Simon Kuharsky. You are not signing the
2008
right out of high school with the Yankees. All right, that's fine. You're on the record. All right, we come back. I am going to rant related to this, Vanderbilt baseball. 102.5, 106.3, the game, Robbie and Rex Road.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Welcome back to the Fat and Bald Show. See us more now.
I'm finally unmuted. I swear I kept clicking the button.
It's so fun to hear you try to be hip.
Hey! Welcome to the Rex Rant with a little Michigan State fight song from Nick Keiser. Because as I put on the board, I'm actually ranting about Michigan State baseball. But more than that, I'm ranting about some, it's Vanderbilt related too. So let's break.
We played
this
against a youth team, a 14U team that wore the Michigan State logo.
A little Spartan head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Spartan head.
It's a good logo. So yeah, it's fine. Yeah, you know, it's no Columbia Lions logo.
Older than the nation itself.
That's pretty good. So. Talking about Tim Corbin of Vanderbilt baseball, one big development for people who follow the program closely. The biggest portal ad he made was Joseph Dwirza, and I hope I'm saying his name correctly.
Sure, from Michigan, confidently.
From Michigan, yeah, from Michigan State, left-handed pitcher, a guy who has the stuff to be potentially Vanderbilt's Friday starter. And so that was a big story. And he's added some other kids in the portal, by the way. They are active in the portal. They're doing the portal. Look, 2 years ago, talk about, by the way, we were talking about the academics. So they got R.J. Schreck, really good player out of Duke, who came to Vanderbilt and was very good. I mean, he was
transfer.
A key add to the lineup. So Joseph Dwirza, I think that's the better way to say it, commits to Vanderbilt and then – whatever, decommits and decides to go back to Michigan State. So Tim Corbin did shed some light on this when I talked to him about, essentially, it sounds like there were some people talking him into getting into the portal when he really didn't want to leave Michigan State. And so that's fine. But I've talked to some people up there, and you know, there's a financial component to this too, as there should be. If I were him, if I were his parents, if there are people willing to pay you to go somewhere, then it's just like if you're potentially leaving a job, then you'd expect your current employer to step up and at least match, if not exceed, right? So my understanding is that there was a financial step up from Michigan State to keep him there, along with, again, Corbin believes he really never wanted to leave in the first place. So that's all fine. Corbin has no hard feelings. He goes back to Michigan State. Good for him. Let me just say, if I were a booster who gives money to Michigan State Athletics and I see the state of a football program that is in the midst of a coaching change, I see Tom Izzo trying to get back to the top of the sport, and he's another guy who, like Corbin, is kind of outspoken and not afraid to say how much he hates this place right now. And I look at one of my fellow boosters giving, I don't know, I mean, I think it's fair to say hundreds of thousands to keep a baseball player. Do you know how irrelevant baseball is at Michigan State? Do you know how relevant baseball is in the Big Ten? Forget Michigan State. It doesn't exist. It's not the same sport. No one cares. Like, I would disassociate myself from this booster. If I would try to disassociate this booster from athletics or say, look, do you understand that the programs that people care about, like hockey, which is very good now, there's the program that people care about, that you fill a hockey arena and it's a big deal in the Big Ten. We're given this kind of money for freaking baseball? What are you doing? It's insane to me. The Big Ten does not play baseball at the same level of the SEC. It's a different sport. Randomly, you'll get a team like Indiana. You got Michigan through. I understand. 5 years ago, Michigan got to the final. But then they fell apart. Their coach left for Clemson because no one cares about baseball in the Big Ten. Relative to the SEC, it does not exist. It just blows my mind. So that is my rant. This booster at Michigan State has gone rogue. Bless you, Kuharsky. And I would be furious if I was someone up there who was trying to get the programs that people care about going, that this money is diverted to this.
I'll be devil's advocate.
Okay.
The guy's a baseball guy. He wants to see his school be better at baseball. He wants to see a Big Ten team nose in on the big boys at baseball.
But I don't think that they're going to at all.
Well, he wants to find out.
Well, I mean, you're just finding out with one player. With whatever the money, I mean, I've heard an amount. I'm not going to say the amount I've heard because I'd second hand.
Friday night starter, you said?
But it's significant.
Friday night starter?
Yeah.
He wants to go on Friday nights and watch this kid pitch.
I mean, I just.
And whistle. Maybe he'll start whistling.
Yeah, well, there you go. The Michigan State Whistler. That's the thing. They built a really nice little stadium there. I mean, Jake Boss is a good coach. It's, again, they're in the Big Ten terms, they're a fine program. But even building the stadium, it's McLean Stadium, by the way. Same guy who built Baylor's McLean Stadium. He's an alum of both of those.
This guy can't pick a school?
Well, he went one undergrad, went one, yeah, and he's a billionaire. So whatever, you know, leave the guy alone. But you do all that, and it's still like, it's just, you can't have a competitive baseball program when you can't play outside for like more than the last 3 weeks of the season. Like, that's why it just doesn't exist.
Well, what this guy should be doing is donating money for an indoor venue. That's what he needs to do if he really wants to compete.
An indoor baseball stadium? Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing. Yeah. Yeah, let's have an indoor college baseball stadium. No, you would be
if
really
he really
good.
Wants yeah. to step it up sure. and see them compete.
Now, that would make all the difference. Oh, my goodness.
SEC schools would be flooding there to play.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, it is amazing. I've said this before, but like when I came down here, well, it's been, what, 8 years, right? More than
is that
8 years.
All?
It's been more than eight
God,
years.
God, Nashville feels like it's been a
yeah,
lot longer
like
than that.
Decades, I know. I was like, oh, you guys – wow, you guys like are really, really into this college baseball, huh? No kidding. And I love
Eight
it.
8 years
like,
ago, I don't know how into it we were. I mean, Vandy.
Sure. Corbin had just – they had just won the title 2 years
yeah,
earlier.
That goes fast.
Yeah, well, you're a hater. You're a college baseball hater.
Yeah,
anyway.
I don't love it.
Yeah, you're
I hate bad umpiring, for starters.
Well, there's plenty of that in your beloved Major
League
Baseball.
I don't like them all yelling at each other constantly. That's not my style.
You don't like
of baseball.
The chanting and whatnot?
I don't like
a
pitcher
dugouts.
Striking a guy out that has to emphasize that he struck the guy out by pumping his fist at him as he leaves the field.
That happens in Major League Baseball.
Not to nearly
not
the same
as much.
Degree.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kids.
Well,
they're
you know, you strike a guy out, what you've done is you've accomplished something by striking him out. By pumping your fist at him, it doesn't add anything to the strikeout. The strikeout has occurred.
So if Simon, Simon makes a great play and he pumps his fist or shows some enthusiasm, you immediately throw cold water on that?
He generally behaves himself, comports himself, as I'm sure you tell your son to do, as if he's done it before.
My son has some enthusiasm. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes maybe a little too much. But you know what? You know, you talk – if it's a little bit over, you talk about it. Other than that, you know, you just
– he gets fired up. He's not chirping at other people's dugouts like some people do, which is not acceptable in our organization.
The Karski organization?
The Nashville Select organization.
Okay. All right. There you go. All right. We come back. We're going to get back into the Titans. Kuharski has some, if healthy, designations ready for camp here. Robbie and Rex are 1025, 1063 the game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.